This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. November is Men's Health Awareness Month, so Talkspace wants guys to know that being prepared for life's biggest challenges and opportunities means prioritizing mental health, too. Talkspace can help you go beyond fine-tuned workouts, supplements, and productivity hacks. Talkspace can help you fine-tune your inner life so you can succeed in being the best version of yourself in any situation. And with Talkspace, you can get therapy from anywhere and on your time. You can even text your therapist between sessions. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace takes most insurance, and most insured members have a $0 copay. Men's Health Awareness Month is the perfect time to reach out to Talkspace. Now, get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com. That's Talkspace.com, promo code SPACE80.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Hello, I'm Jim Cornell, and this is the WalkingPost.com podcast. WalkingPost.com is the news website dedicated to walking, with all the latest on gear, books, health, festivals, trails, events, fitness, and more. This podcast is number 28, and it's going out on September the 19th. And I'm cheating a bit, because I'm recording it in advance, because on the 19th, I'll be doing some interviews in Lithuania. So, as I'm recording it early, I can't really tell you what's happened in the past week. Hopefully, I've done a nice walk while I'm away, and hopefully, it's very nice weather. I always do try and get at least one walk in when I'm on a trip. Anyway, September the 19th is, for some strange reason, International Talk Like a Pirate Day, and I'm not going to. On a serious note, it's Raspberry Day, but not the fruit. It's about increasing awareness of the neurological condition cavernoma, where the lesions look a little bit like raspberries. And today is also Concussion Awareness Day. And that's a good thing too, because for far too long, concussions weren't taken seriously. It's also the day of the first ever Glastonbury Festival. Any guesses on the year? Well, it was 1970. For birthdays, Adam West, in my opinion, the only Batman, and I realise most other people will disagree, including everybody in my family. And it's the birthday of Jeremy Irons and Twiggy. The cough from COVID hasn't gone, and apparently it can take weeks, which I'm just thrilled about. Because I don't have any news, let's get straight to the podcast. Last time we had a conversation about walk and talk for mental health, which is a great idea. This week, the chat is with an author, Leah Appleton, whose book, Walking and Wayfinding, Create Your Own Mindful Practice One Step at a Time, is available in print or as an audiobook. This week we don't have our usual look at some of the week's articles on WalkingPost.com, because getting the podcast together a week in advance means I've recorded this part before any news went up online. If you do have news, however, or guest ideas, or subjects to cover, or comments, or if you want to advertise, please do get in touch via WalkingPost.com, or you can just email me at jim@WalkingPost.com. So just the one conversation again this week, and it is, as I mentioned earlier, a conversation with Leah Appleton about her helpful book, Walking and Wayfinding, Create Your Own Mindful Practice One Step at a Time. So let's get to it. All right. Hi, Leah. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast this week. And I wonder if first, before we talk about the book, you could tell me a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been a career coach, working mostly in workplace well-being. And I've been doing that for about 6 years now. I had my career for the most part here in the U.S. as an administrator in higher education. So I worked at the university level for a long time. And after COVID, like many people, I decided, okay, it's time for a career pivot. And I had done some professional development training to learn about coaching. And so I decided that I'd throw my hat in there and really, really enjoyed it. What's interesting for me is that for the first few years, my walking things were one strand and my coaching things were another strand. And in the last 6 months or so, or maybe even since the beginning of the year, I've been moving them closer and closer together. And part of that is my experience of walking as really the place to wonder and to think sometimes, or to not think, depending on what I need for the day, that's my place, my way of becoming more calm, becoming less stressed. And so I have done some guided walking experiences around that. You know, I wrote my book around that. I just started a blog here in the US called hiphiker.com, but I mean, I guess you can get it anywhere. And because I did a series of really long backpacking trips this summer in the High Sierra, and I was researching about it, and many of the blogs, there were a handful, but many of them were a lot younger people doing it. And I realized that some of the things for me were a little different. I couldn't go as long, perhaps in a day. I couldn't carry as much. I had a hip replacement last summer, so I had to be cognizant of what my limits were. And so I started a blog for adventurous aging, active aging, for walking, hiking, and backpacking. So I am kind of maybe, even, I won't say I'm pivoting, but I'm moving together this idea of workplace well-being, being able to be mindful at your desk, but also being able to take breaks. And for me, walking is the activity of choice for that. That's how I spend my days. A lot of hours in conversation with people. It's been a great way to spend my work life in talking people through life transitions primarily.
Did you kind of find that you're trying to open up more people to the capacity to, yes, you can do this?
Absolutely. I think that there are an awful lot of younger women who are making blogs as well about hiking. But again, they're in their 20s and they can hike 20 miles. And it's no big deal. And, you know, a lot of people are doing ultralight hiking. But for me, and you don't even have to backpack. I mean, backpacking, I love, but you can walk around the block, right? And so getting people to realize that this is a continuum of outdoor movement activity, I guess I would say. And I say walking, hiking, backpacking, just to kind of distinguish that I walk, and if I sleep overnight, I'm in a hotel probably, or a bed and breakfast or something. And if I'm hiking, it's probably just for the day. And then if I'm backpacking, I'm a little bit more out in the backcountry somewhere. But for sure, to be able to think about this as an invitation, even for people who haven't done it before. I haven't backpacked my whole life, but a lot of my adult life I have. I actually started with backpacking, and then I found hiking, and then I found walking. So I did it in sort of, in some ways, kind of a backwards order, if you will. But it really, yeah, I definitely think that if you see that image and you think, oh, that's not me, because I'm not that image, and you think, oh, I have, you know, I have to carry medication, for instance, for myself because I have osteoporosis. I have to, you know, not carry as much. I have to not go as far. And so could you, right? So being able to say, you know, you could do a backpacking trip and have it be a couple miles. It's not about the miles. It's about trying it. And, you know, some people don't like sleeping outside and being dirty, which kind of comes along with that. But if they have an inkling that they might, then to open that up as a possibility for them. Absolutely.
How did that connect to a book? Did you just one day think, I should write about this? Or how did the initial seed start?
I was going to take a sabbatical and walk the Camino de Santiago for my work. I was going to do it with my sister in May of 2020. And we all know that the beginning of that year, kind of everything stopped. And, you know, the airline tickets were canceled and Spain said, sorry, you can't come. And it all made lots of sense. I completely understood it at the time. But I had been walking since the fall, the previous fall. We were really ready to go. And when everything shut down, it was like, all right. And I still walked because I was already in that practice. But then about a year or so later, I'd retired from higher education the following year. And then I thought, you know, I'm really disappointed that I couldn't go. And, you know, things were starting to open up, but I wasn't in the place at that point where I had that time and the money and my sister couldn't go. And so I was like, well, I can't do that. So I created a DIY pilgrimage. And you were talking earlier about walking along the coast of California. So I decided that I would take public transportation to get myself to the coast. And so I took the train. I walked to the train station here in my town, took the train, then took a bus, and then got dropped off like in a store parking lot, and then walked down to the beach. It was about, I don't know, 4 or 5 miles, and then walked down the coast and stayed in these small beach hotels. And I walked about 70 miles over the course of 5 days. And I wanted to see what it was like, right? Just to get a taste of, well, why do people do this? I wasn't even sure why I wanted to do the Camino, but I did. Somehow I was like, I have to just try this thing. So I made my own. I walked down the coast of California and I discovered a couple of things. One was that, you know, the longer that I walked, the calmer that I felt in the day. And while I might not be able to backpack, you know, 15 or 20 miles, I could walk that far if I start early enough and I don't go super fast. I can just keep going because I carried a little teeny backpack and with, you know, clothes and toothbrush and things like that. And my sister walked with me one day. I walked by myself. My sister walked with me. My husband joined me for one day. And on the last day, my dad, who was 83 at the time, joined me for the last 7 miles. And it was so lovely to be able to spend time with people who mattered a lot to me and to be at the ocean, which for me is always a place of possibility because it's so open. It's so big. It's so much bigger than I am. And it also, I always think about when I'm at the ocean, that it connects me to the people on the other side of the ocean. So I always feel connected when I'm there. And I had a great experience. So I decided when that was finished that I was going to do a pilgrimage every year. And circumstances were such that that didn't seem really likely. I was starting my coaching back practice. My business was kind of in its infancy. And I thought, oh, I don't know if taking a week away is smart right now, but I still wanted to do it. So then I decided I'm going to do one long day. And that's what developed into this wayfinding day. And I was doing some reading about, I don't even remember the kernel of that, but I was doing some reading about wayfinding as, you know, how people navigate in this, you know, boats navigate in the sea, how people navigate around cities and communities, and how part of it is following signs and part of it is intuitive. You just kind of can tell by what you see where it is you turn and where you go. And so I did a day-long walk in California from Santa Monica in the beach. Again, I took the train out there. For all the talk about LA not having lots of public transportation, I discovered there was a lot if you look for it. It's just not quite as accessible as in some places. So I took the train out and then I began walking. And I was going to end at Hermosa Beach, which is about, I think, about 12 or 13 miles. And at that point, I was like, I'm going to keep going. So I walked all the way down to Redondo Beach. It was about 17 miles. And my intent for that day was I had come in with a series of questions. I was very specific about this. I wanted to get some clarity around my business. I wanted to decide, you know, now that I was working for myself, what did I want my daily life to look like? I was really using it as kind of a strategy session, if you will. But that didn't happen at all. I started walking. It was super crowded. It was early spring and everybody was out because it was a sunny day and it was a holiday weekend and it was loud and there were bicycle bells and people zooming by on the boardwalk that I was walking on. There were people selling stuff. There were signs everywhere and it was just kind of overwhelming. And so I think it initially sort of distracted me because I wasn't thinking. I was just looking at, oh, wow, this is like a lot of people and a lot of stuff. And then as I kept walking, there were signs that would pop out and they struck me as sort of odd or funny or like, but I wasn't sure why they were. They were, I remember the first one I saw was like, we serve brunch on Sundays. And I was like, I'm thinking about serving brunch and was I hungry? And, you know, it was funny. And then I got past all the city and I was walking and it became quieter and it became more open. And as I sat down to journal to revisit those questions I had brought for the day, I found myself writing down the names of all the signs I saw and instead starting to follow the thread that each of them brought up for me. Like, I mentioned in my book, there's a lot of signs that say slow down, because everybody's on their bicycle and their rollerblades and they're going too fast and they're running over people like me who are walking. And I thought, I wonder, outside of this moment, because I already was walking, I was the slowest one on the path, where outside of here do I need to slow down? And that's how it began. That began the kernel. And I spent the rest of the day just noticing, seeing all sorts of funny signs that I didn't anticipate about, you know, where, you know, if it was a wildlife refuge, or if here was where you parked, or and then just followed what it made me think about in the moment. And then by the very end, I wasn't really thinking. I was just kind of in it. It was almost a meditative state. I was tired too, I think, at that point. But I just walked the rest of the time and took a lift home, and or lift back to my car, and then drove home. When I was telling people about that, I think that felt more accessible than my 5-day 70 miles walk down the coast, or even the Camino or something like that, or backpacking in the High Sierra. And people were like, oh, I want to do that. Like, oh, okay. So I had some prototypes, I led some guided walks, and gave some reflection questions, because I was, you know, doing my work as a coach. And the kinds of questions that came up for me as I walked, you know, what do I notice? What am I experiencing? What's going on in my body? Are there any external things that are making me think internally about what's happening? And people really liked that. But then I also realized that I couldn't do this all the time, because I wanted to spend time with my family, because I had to do it on the weekends, because that was when people could do it. And so that's when I decided to write the book. I thought, well, you know, I could talk about the kind of things and people could go do this themselves, like I did. I made it up and I went out and I did it. And so the book is kind of twofold. One, it talks about this idea of wayfinding, which, you know, you can do or not do, but using the signage to make you as your prompt to think. But really, it's kind of a primer on a mindful practice. What does it mean to be mindful in the moment? How could one use walking to be mindful, or frankly, any activity if you wanted to be more present, to be more focused? And then that's how the book developed. And it began to change then how I did my own work and kind of these other avenues of interest that I've been developing over the last year or two. So that's how it began. It's a long story, but it's all true about the process. In some ways, the walking is what led me to it, the actual walking. It wasn't just an idea. It was the walking that then became an idea of, oh, how to share this with other people.
You're talking about your sister and your husband and your father walking with you. Do you think that the change of venue does something to that? Because if you visit with a parent or a sibling or a friend, there's a kind of a familiarity of situation, whereas when you're in walking, you don't look at your phone or watch the television, or you're out of that zone that you're normally in. Do you think that plays a part in the way that we kind of externalize and internalize when we're walking?
I think there's a couple of things that happen. For me, my intent was to do that walking pilgrimage by myself. But then since they were interested, I'm like, okay, you can come too. But for me, they're a little different. When I walk by myself, there's a lot of, I'm in the space and I'm feeling connected to this space, I think. Me in that space and what's happening. I talk about in my book being connected to place, like what is it about the place? And for me, the coastline in California is relatively familiar to me. I've grown up in Southern California. I think it might be different walking in places. Well, it is different when I walk in places that I'm not familiar with, that I haven't walked in before, but I'm much more aware of the space. When I walk with people, I'm much more connected to the people and less conscious of the space or the time. So I think they're kind of different experiences for me. I like them both, but they're not the same for me anyway. I don't know how to describe it. Yeah, I feel like I'm more in the space when I'm by myself, and I'm more in the relationship when I'm with other people.
Do you think that when you're walking that there has to be, you mentioned the signs and wayfinding, do you think that there always has to be a destination or a reason for going walking?
No, actually. Well, I think it depends on how you define reason, maybe. You know, why it is you want to walk. I don't think there has to be a destination at all. In fact, when I did my pilgrimage, I had endpoints because I'd made hotel reservations and I wanted to be sure I had a place to sleep. But when I did my day long, or even when I go out in my neighborhood for a walk, I don't generally decide how long or how far. I simply go. I might be aware, well, I have to be back by a certain time, or, you know, I'm noticing I'm tired, it's time to turn around. But I think it's kind of like walking by myself and with other people, as I really think about it, that you can have a destination. And sometimes destinations are fabulous. You know, that gives you an endpoint that you can, you don't have to, you know that it's going to end at that point. You've planned it out. So I think that can be helpful, but I don't think it's necessary. I think that walking without a focused end can be transformative in a different kind of way. Cause you're just kind of like, okay, maybe I end when it's dark, you know, whenever that is, or maybe I end when I'm tired, which is what I did on my day long first, the first one that I did. I think that in terms of having a reason to go walking, again, I think it's kind of both. I think having intentions, or I'm going to go walk because I'm stressed out and I need to just move my body, that's a perfectly good reason. And I'm going to go walk and see what happens because I don't know, I feel like walking today, or I've decided that this is the time of the day that I'm going to go someplace new and walk around. I think walking without the focus allows you to be in the moment maybe a little bit better and just experience whatever walking is, which I really like. And I think in some ways is the part of the book that I'm inviting people to do a little bit more. I think often we walk with a reason. But I also think that paying attention is reason enough. Maybe that's it, right? So I'm in the moment, I'm going out to see what happens. That's a reason. It's just a different kind of reason than I'm walking to the store, or I'm walking for fitness, or I'm walking to relax or whatever. So that's a really good question. What do you think? I'm wondering.
Well, the reason that I ask it is because I think that everybody is different insofar as I know that for me, if somebody said, I'm going to take you and drop you off at the edge of a forest, there's a part of me that, or most of me, would say, where am I going? I need a route. And if the route is on my phone or a map or an information board that has routes on it, I would plan. I would stand there and say, okay, I'm going to go the blue loop. And then if I do that quickly, then what I'll do is I'll go back on the green one and I'll come across on the red one. And there's a part of me that doesn't enjoy or has never done something where I just say, I'm going to start here. I'm going to go down that path. And when I get to the end of there, maybe I'll go left, maybe I'll go right. And I think that there's a part of us that kind of likes that planning, but also craves the independence of not planning. And I think that it's kind of interesting to ask yourself questions and to do things that you've never done before, because I think we all approach things in a very ordered way, in the way that we've always done it. So it's kind of nice to think of being able to ask yourself questions like you've done in the book, and to kind of guide yourself, but not guide yourself. It's kind of amorphous in a way, but still with a kind of a reasons for doing what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think certainly there's probably preference. You know, some people probably like having the order and might feel some discomfort in, like, I don't know how long I'm going to go today. I don't know if I like that or not. And I think that, you know, if we're in situations where we're safe, and relatively so anyway, that we can go out and explore and not get lost, or explore and not be harmed or whatever, then I think it's a I think it's a great thing to try. And, you know, for me, walking down the coast, I knew in my head, it just keeps going. It goes until the border of the US, it goes to the border of Mexico and the United States. So I could, if I wanted to, walk all the way down there. I knew I wasn't going to go that far. But yeah, I think I kind of like, I certainly like knowing, if I had a preference, I'd like not having a time restraint. Much more like if I want to plan a walk so I know where I'm going to end as a destination, that seems better than saying I have to be done by 2 p.m. That starts to stress me out from the beginning usually, and I don't enjoy it the same way. So time is certainly a boundary that is more difficult for me when I'm walking, or in the sense of being able to be present in the moment. So I love going on a hike, or even, you know, when I'm backpacking, I don't ever set a time like I have to be at camp by whatever, because then I'm already all the way along trying to get there. But yeah, I think the possibility, one of the things that I haven't tried, but I've been playing around with is, like in my neighborhood, I might be like, okay, I'm going to go here. And I think I'm going to go here, you know, turn here today. Or I have a regular loop that my husband and I walk, but then when I walk, I kind of switch it up. But I was thinking, I wonder if I played a game, you know, what it'd be like, okay, if the corner has a fire hydrant, I'm going to turn right. And if I get to a T, I'm going to always turn left and just see where it takes me, you know, almost like a wayfinding scavenger hunt or something like that, to be playful and not have planned out where I'm going to go. And I don't know if I'd think that was fun or if that would feel disconcerting, but I'd like to try it and see what happens.
Yeah, I just think sometimes we think of walking as something that we do, or we have a destination, and sometimes it's nice to step outside of the comfort zone, but it's not something that we always do. And I just wondered, like, how much of a individual experience you feel that walking is, because if all that we ever do is say, okay, today I'm going to go A to B, and then next time I go, I'm going to go A to B, it'll be a different walk, but I'm going to do A to B, and we kind of set ourselves up to do that kind of same, it's a different scenery, but it's the same process. And I wonder if you think that there are ways that we can make it different, or challenge ourselves, or go outside of the comfort zone, or ask ourselves questions like you do in the book, whereas sometimes something will pop into your head and you'll go there and you'll solve a problem. Other times you'll have an argument with somebody in your head that you met 2 weeks ago that just pops into your head, and it's very spontaneous. So some of what you're saying is quite guided and quite structured.
I think for me, like when I lead the guided experiences, they're structured for me because I know when I plan to stop or where I plan to stop with a small group of people, but they don't. And so I'm leading them on something that for them feels like, all right, this is, you know, we're going to take a rest now. Always inviting them that if they need to stop, that they can let me know and we can do so earlier. But in that sense, it's guided, but they don't have to plan. They don't have to decide how long it is before we take the next break, or what path, you know, on some of the paths around on the coastal areas have like more nature reserve things, and there's multiple paths. And so generally I'll pick so that they just follow. But I think when we're doing it ourselves, I don't think there's a right way to do it. I don't think there's even necessarily a better way to do it. I think it's just different. And to invite ourselves to do, sometimes it is point A to point B. Sometimes it's like, I want to walk 5 miles today and I have a mileage in place. Sometimes it's, you know, I have to be back because I have a call in 20 minutes. Or, and sometimes it's like, I'm just going to go outside and see what I notice. Sometimes I mentioned this in my book. And one of the things that's funny is that I think I thought of it myself, but then I've discovered like, oh, lots of people have thought of this. This wasn't just me. But I talk about going on a rainbow walk, and where I went the different days in the row. And the first day I did red, and I only, you know, I looked everywhere for red things. And the next day I did orange, and I went through Roy G. Biv of the rainbow. The other day I went for a walk, and I thought, I'm going to do we're a soundscape. I'm going to see if I can listen to every bird and try to distinguish and see if I can hear, you know, car sounds or whatever, right? And paying attention to that. But I didn't go out saying, I'm going to listen to sound today. I just started walking and I think I heard a sound and I thought, oh, I think I'm going to listen to sounds and see what comes up. So maybe being open, if people only walk from A to B, even if it's a different and it's very destination based, maybe being open to say, okay, how might I do it differently and see what opens up, you know, see if it's fun. I mean, most of us don't like to do things that are repetitively yucky for us, right? So it may be that, like, without a destination, it's too uncomfortable, so I don't want to walk. Okay, fine. Then pick some other thing that mixes it up a little bit, because I think there's so many different ways we can walk. You know, we started this part of the conversation with, we can walk by ourselves, we can talk with other people, and then just now you were mentioning we can have conversations in our head with ourselves, with someone else, with what's out there, the plants and animals. We can notice what our senses tell us. So maybe just recognizing that we can switch it up and that there's so many different ways to experience a walk that are all, I think, really positive and energizing.
Each chapter that you have has those questions at the end. Is that a mm-hmm. part of it? Is that giving the readers or listeners to the audiobook, is it to give people strategies to do different things when they're walking? I mean, it's not like, okay, today I've got to do chapter 8 and answer right. these questions, and it's not like an exam or anything. Is it kind Mm-mm. of opening people up to possibilities?
Absolutely. In fact, I say at the beginning of the book, you don't even really have to read it in order. You could say, I just want to go try this way and I want to try this way. So it's to give kind of like a sampling, like, here is this way, this way, this way, this way. Have you tried this? Would you like to try this? And there's probably more. I think near the end of the book, the question for reflection says, ask your own questions now, right? So that realizing that we can go out and, you know, that's how I found it. I made up what seemed interesting to me, what seemed to draw me into the experience, and that each of us can do that in different ways. I have a friend and we led a haiku wayfinding. So she expresses her experience with the world with haiku poetry. So we went around and we did some mindful practice activities as we walked. And then we learned how to write haiku because that's how she liked to do it. And I'm working with another friend right now. We're going to do one in the fall that's wayfinding watercolor, because that's how he goes and experiences. You know, some people take their sketchbook, some people take their journal. So if that's not your way, try it. There may be something there that, you know, you hadn't experienced before. I don't hike with or walk or backpack with headphones, because for me, that really puts me inside myself so that I'm not paying attention to anything. But some people really like that. But I like to be a little bit more open to what's out there so I can hear and see and smell. But yeah, I think it's definitely an invitation to try something new. Sometimes I will listen to an audiobook. I'll even remember things in a different way because, you know, at this intersection, I heard this, and, you know, and I'll drive by and I'm like, oh, yeah, that book, that's what I was listening to. But I don't do that very often. But I think it's maybe it comes down to what's your purpose or what's your reason for your walk today. And I think it's hard to do it all in one walk. Like, you can't talk and listen and, you know, pay attention to signs and do them all at the same time. I think that's a little bit too much for a walk. But you can pick different things that you might want to do, or you might bring them all with you and say, actually, I think now I'm going to listen and now I'm going to put it away. So lots of cool ways to do it.
Yeah. And I think maybe the pace of what you're doing has an impact, because I know that there are places everywhere that I've been in a car and also on foot. And I think that you feel when you drive past a place that you've walked, you feel like a bit more of a connection to that place because you've walked through it. It's a strange kind of feeling, because you drive past a town all the time, but if you've walked along that path, as you said about remembering the intersections, there are kind of landmarks that you think, oh, it was wet the day that I walked here, or there was somebody walking by at the same time, and you connect, whereas places that you've never walked, you don't have that connection. I don't know why it should be, but
I think some of it has to do with, you know, how aware you are in that moment. But also, when you talk about the pace, I think that's something that I really like about walking. I talk about how for me, walking is very analog. It's just, it's a physical thing. It takes a lot of time and you have to be there in your body to do it. And so I think that we experience things differently that way. There's an author, Rebecca Sultnit, writes about how she thinks that walking is at the pace that we think. And that's one of that, that often when we're doing other things that are quicker, we can't think in the same kind of way. And I think there is something about that, that it allows for like a different kind of experience when it's not so quick. And I like that. I like that part of walking for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's when you were mentioning about mindfulness, I think that maybe there's a more of a capacity to be mindful when you're walking that isn't necessarily there when you're multitasking or driving, or because you're not really concentrating in the same way that you do when you walk.
Yeah. I think there may be, I don't know all the science behind it, but I think there may be something about the physicality, the movement of it, that is also helpful. I mean, I know a lot of people find mindful practices of sitting meditation to be really valuable. I don't do that very well. And I find that when I walk, I experience things like people describe having meditated. And I think it's because the movement is almost, the repetitive movement, the slowness of it is what gets me into that kind of meditative state.
You wrote the book, but then you also went another step and did the audio book. What prompted that?
Well, it was funny. I had a book launch party and invited a bunch of people, and we were there and I read an excerpt and I told them about the story of how I got it going. And, you know, we were mingling and one person was like, well, are you going to do an audiobook? I'm like, I don't know. I thought about it, but I said, I don't know who would read it. He's like, you have to read it. I'm like, really? And so I thought about that and I thought, oh, I've not done anything quite like this before. So I did some research and found an audio engineer who came to my house. In fact, behind that door made a little recording studio in my hallway and put all this stuff around it to soundproof it. And it ended up being so interesting to hear my own words out loud. I would say it came out in January of this year. And I would say it took a good 6 months for me to be able to listen to it, because it was like, most of us don't like the sound of our voice. And I was just like, oh, but I was listening to it. My husband and I were going on a backpack trip and he's like, let's listen to your book. I'm like, no, I don't want to listen to my book. He's like, well, let's just pick a chapter. So we picked a chapter and they're really short, which is something that's kind of nice. You know, it's just a few minutes. And it was cool. And we did the exercise. We did the questions at the end. It was the chapter about the writing the acrostic poem to get you from ponder to wonder. And so we each wrote poems and we listened to the poem and it was really fun. And I thought, oh, maybe it was a brave thing for sure to create the audiobook myself. But I'm really glad that I did it. But it came from someone asking me, you know, when are you going to do this? You should do it. And so I did.
What's the reaction been like to both the print version and the audio version?
I think, you know, people often have preferences for one or the other. The thing that helped me was, you know, I would almost find myself apologizing, especially to people I know, like, oh, well, you know, I'm reading it slowly. And, you know, the audio technician was like, this is a book about a mindful practice. If you talk like you usually talk, which for me is like really fast, like, that's not going to get the point across. It's okay that it's slow. And so he would slow me down and slow me down. But other people who heard it really liked that. And that made me feel better about the whole process. So I've learned to really appreciate the audiobook because of other people's experiences of it. The paper book, you know, people like it because it's small. They can take it with them. You know, I encourage people. I left some space. People can write it in if they want. I'm working on a journal now. That's going to come out probably spring again. And some additional questions, so that if coming up with your own questions leaves you at a loss, then I'll give you some other suggestions, some more ideas and ways to think about it. But the response has been good. And it's fun to see, you know, you get your reports from Amazon that, you know, somebody's bought it in Brazil or somebody's bought it in Japan. And I'm like, wow, that's really great. That's been fun. And it kind of keeps the conversations going, right? I get a chance to talk to you about it. You know, I certainly learn as I go the things that, you know, when I write my next one, what I might focus on instead, or how the process of wayfinding for me now, as I do it, I realize, you know, there's wayfinding, but there also is being mindful without any specific intention, as I was telling you, just going and walking and being present in that moment without trying to answer a question. And so maybe there are a couple of different processes that I might explore further when I write some more.
You were saying something coming out next year?
Yes, I'm going to have a journal, and I have a set. I've been working on a set of a deck of cards for wayfinding, because, you know, if you can't get out, or it isn't safe, or you're not mobile, and doesn't mean you couldn't use external things to give you a reflection prompt. So I'm creating them from some of the photographs I've taken, and some of the signs are really fun, you know, and interesting, so that you pull it out and you're like, okay, so now I'm looking at the sign. I didn't have to go outside, and this still gives me a chance to do that. I don't have a date for that one yet, but next year sometime.
The only medium that you haven't addressed so far is video. Are you going to do anything along those lines?
It's kind of like the audio. It's funny. I'm like, oh, wow, that's a whole nother level. Maybe. Yeah. And now that you ask, you know, I'll probably have to go think about that a little bit more. Somebody did ask me if I would do like little individual snippets on my walks to invite people along on that. So I have to think about that. But that's another level of brave to me, is to put myself on video on a regular time.
Leah's book is available on Amazon, and it's definitely well worth a read or a listen if you go for the audiobook. In some ways, it kind of ties in with last week's conversation about walking and mental health. I don't know about you, but I always feel better when I'm out walking, even in the rain, wind and snow. And you can get all three of those at once here in Scotland. Anyway, that's it for another podcast. If you do have news or suggestions for podcast guests, please do get in touch through jim@walkingpost.com. I hope you enjoyed this week's walkingpost.com podcast, and I hope you have a great week ahead, hopefully with a walk involved. And hopefully I'm walking in Lithuania right now as you are listening to this. So until next time, happy trails. Walking Post from walkingpost.com is an Air Coastal Media Limited production.